Seems to be constant changes in the world of computers, from the speed at which they work to, things are getting a lot smaller, more powerful machines have become more and more affordable over time. Some things appear and stay for a long time, you might even say an eternity in tech terms. And certainly one of those is Microsoft's Internet Explorer web browser. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Microsoft is apparently retiring their Internet Explorer, and we're going to find out what that means for users. Peter Green, our guest today. Pete's an independent computer consultant with Infostar.com, provides great information and resources at Infostar.com. And Pete, always great to have you with us.
Always great to be back, Larry.
Well, I tell you what, Internet Explorer has been around a long time.
A little history lesson. You go back to 1994, and you have a plugin add-in to Microsoft Word to browse the web. Yeah. That was before Internet Explorer came along. And then when they released Windows 95, they had Internet Explorer as part of the release. And as the internet and really the web, because the web is what we see, the graphical interface, the internet is the connectivity of the computers,
right,
the email servers, the file transfer between computers and so forth. And the web is what we, how we, you know, visually share all these web pages and the interactive multimedia. So there were so many browsers back then to just allow us to view the web. And Microsoft really didn't have anybody working on the internet side of things until Windows 95. And then, boom, all of a sudden it's like, hey, we better start paying attention because this looks like it's not going away.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, there have been a lot of complaints associated with.
Well, you know, if you go back to the history of web pages, and a lot of people, including myself, and my web, I'm not going to brag or anything, my web page, you know, by today's standards, stinks because it's going back to the past in terms of table and frame-based display, really table-based structure of a web page.
Yeah.
And it's now using cascading style sheets, and tables are part of that, but not the overall structure or design layout of a web page.
Yeah.
So along that way, as the web evolved and grew to what we have today, standards came out of that. You know, the people came to agreement, committee agreement, that said, hey, this is the way we really should be doing these things, and not that way because of these reasons, and improve upon it, and improve upon the user experience, improve upon the designability in terms of making it easier to design a website that has hundreds, thousands of pages, to make it easier to create page after page. Different purpose pages, forms pages, tables pages to display data, you know, for stock markets and banking, financial, and things like that. So, and then all the connectivity, the communication stuff that goes on, where messaging and things like that. So when you look at Internet Explorer, and they're saying, you know, it's going to be retired or sunsetted is another term.
Yeah.
Is it really going away? I mean,
yeah.
Is it a clean cut? You know, probably not, because they have to bring along things that they've done. The people that are part of that team that designed Internet Explorer to improve upon the user experience to make the product better. And Microsoft got called out at one time for marrying Internet Explorer to the operating system to the point where it was monopolizing it, because it was looked as the information superhighway. And they were controlling the on and off ramps.
Yeah.
Well, if you're controlling the on and off ramps to the super information highway, it looks like you're in control of things. So, you know, they had to make some changes to it along the way, and they also interact with using Internet Explorer and the web for updating their operating system, because if you try to do that with something like Firefox or Chrome, they're going to, you know, bounce back to you and say, hey, you need to be using Internet Explorer to do this, because this is how Microsoft works with the operating system. So to say that it's really going away, it's going to be a name change, just like, you know, a car company makes a marquee change and says, hey, you know, this is this is going away in the SUV market or the compact market, but then we're coming out with something else to take its place. So if you're driving from point A to point B, it's just going to be with a different name, but it's not like they're not going to be in the web browser business. Microsoft is going to have another web browser, so it's just going to be another way for getting from point A to point B on the web.
So are they just sick of the name, or what?
Probably the marketing people said, what are we going to keep going with this for Internet Explorer 11, 12, 15, 19,
let's get
20,
come up let's... with something sexier sounding, huh?
Yep. Just like what, you know, Windows 10 versus they're skipping 9. Or maybe it was 9 internally and they decided for some reason it was a unlucky number.
You know, for all the complaints, I mean, there were a lot of complaints. They still managed to keep a big share of the browsing traffic, weren't they? I mean, didn't they?
Or... Yeah, they still have a big share because it's right there in front of you. You have to actively, you know, go and get the other browsers. And you really should have other browsers on your system as backups, because if you're having problems with one, doesn't mean you're having problems with the other. The other thing is Microsoft has a product called Expressions Web, which is for designing web pages. So they have plugins to Internet Explorer for previewing how you're designing the web page. So if you look at some of the other products that are out there for not only Microsoft but for other companies, typically they're launching Internet Explorer because it's popular, and Firefox and Chrome. So the plugins are going to have to change for some of those things as well.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. You can join in with your computer question. I hope you will. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show Facebook page. You can post a question or comment there. And you can also email us at talk@WPR.org. On Facebook, Stephen Kakana said, I recently had a new high-end desktop using Windows 7 Pro built for me. It has a 256 gig C boot drive and a 3TB traditional spinning secondary drive. The system restore files are defaulting to the boot drive and using up a large volume of space. Instead of making the usable space for system restore files smaller, can I redirect them? That's a complicated question. Just off the top of your head.
Yeah, I don't think you can read, because system restore typically creates the space on each respective drive. So I don't believe you can do it with the operating system. Maybe somebody came out with an add-on to be able to do that. But typically as part of system restore, it's directed to the specific drive itself. The only option is to resize it. And you know that what happens is they fall off. So if you do set up, you know, you go in and say, okay, I want to create a restore point for today, and then you let the system do it based on system updates or it's on autopilot. Eventually, those restore points start falling off. So they're not going to be there forever.
Lion McFarland has a question for you. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yes, hi there. I've got a new Asus laptop computer about a week old, and it is turning itself on by itself. Even when I do a proper shutdown and come, the next morning, the computer's on and the battery's draining down. So obviously it's, doing updating or working or something while it's on. So I'd like to know how to shut it, how to do something so that it doesn't turn itself on. I've got it connected to a new wireless network here. I checked the BIOS, and I couldn't see anything there, and I don't know what else to do.
In the operating system, there are some power options to take a look at. But if you're actually doing an actual shutdown, I don't see how it's getting a wake-up call unless there's some other plug-in that's being alerted, even with updates, because if it's shut off, it's not going to get woken up that there's an update coming until the computer's actually turned on.
Well, I do have a desktop that is, I just put it to sleep, and it's also on the same wireless network. I wonder if they're communicating with one another.
But if it's actually in the actual shutoff mode, that's different than being, in hibernating. So one of the things I would look at is the power options.
Okay.
Another one is probably... I'm sure Asus probably have a pretty good website. You may want to go and check their tech support and do some searches through there, because they may have some other program, you know, that they load from the factory. They may have some settings, but when you actually do a shutdown, it's really off.
Yeah,
you know, when it, even though it's plugged in, it's the computer has been told to be done, you know, quiet, done, and offline.
Yeah, that was my thought.
Yeah,
could there be a worm, some little virus that got itself in there already?
The only other thing I can think of is that there's some program that is programmed to wake it up, but if the operating system has actually been told to do a shutdown, then. Unless you've got some kind of special alarm clock built into that computer to actually turn it back on. That's why I would go the way of checking with Asus. There could even be, you know, it's an appliance. It's a hardware product with software. Cars, the same thing. There are sometimes issues with brand new products. I mean, I've seen it where I tried to log on to a Wi-Fi network, and the computer kept rebooting, and it would flash this error message. And when it was brand new out of the box, and when I called tech support, they told me I had a worm virus, and I said, I haven't even hooked it up to the internet. Where is this worm virus coming from? There's no way. And they insisted upon it, and I did the research, and it turned out to be the OEM Wi-Fi card had a problem with the chip in it, and it needed to be updated. So I had to download an update and apply that to the computer, and then the error message went away, and I was able to use the Wi-Fi. So brand new out of the box, it was broken.
Yeah.
It would not work.
Yeah,
and it was because of a problem with the factory installed card.
There you go. Good luck, Lyle. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give some more people a chance to join in. You have a computer question for Pete. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Amy in West Bend next. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question. I recently switched to Google Chrome from Internet Explorer, and some of my programs that I have are still launching with Internet Explorer, programs that I had put on, you know, downloaded prior to the Chrome. How can I change the launch?
What you have to do is you use Windows Explorer, and it's called Folder Options. You could probably the best thing is if you go to Google and you do a search on program. Let's see how I'd phrase it. Default program startup changes. And what it is you're going to go use Internet Explorer, which is how you manage files on your computer. And then you have to go to where the program that you want to change is located on your computer. And that's typically under the folder called Program Files.
Okay.
And then what you need to do is once you find that program, you need to change the options of what it's using to start with.
Okay. I kept trying, you know,
and
to
there
like click on my like app or whatever it is out there and change it that way, and it wasn't working.
Yeah, so you'll probably be able to find a YouTube video on that because it's been around for a very long time.
Okay.
Or do a Google search on it and find it as
well.
Yeah,
it's going to pop up.
Because it's a popular thing.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Ames. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar.com. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much for listening in today. If you have a question about your computer or your software, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Just to mention, at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn and her guest, a professor of film and media culture, talk about the new storytelling devices used in TV and how TV shows have become a lot more complex. That's at 2 o'clock. Right now, Peter Green, give us a call. Here's Corey from Watertown. Hi, Corey.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hi.
I just thought I'd call in with the mystery laptop turning on all by itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's got an infrared pickup, and one of his remotes in his house, when he's using it, is turning the laptop on and off.
Yeah, that's a good possibility. I have that happen.
I've had it happen on mine. I've had it happen on several other people's. Mine was my DVR player would turn on my laptop. And
that's a good thing to look at.
Oh, so now how does that run that by me once more?
Laptops. I have a laptop that has a remote control for it.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, because it has a TV pickup.
Oh.
But there's a lot of laptops that have that that type of infrared pickup, and people don't even realize it's there.
That's a good thing to check out. I know I have one, and I have a stereo system that when I'm turning on and off or dealing with channels on the TV, and every now and then I hear this sound and I walk over to it and it turned on, and it's not even the remote that works for that.
Right. That is a great suggestion. Thanks, Corey. Appreciate the call. You got a kind of a bad line there for him, but that was good information.
I have that happen all the time.
Pat in Oregon, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Good morning.
Hi.
Morning.
I have a Mac PowerBook, and it's a few years old. I bought it with Mountain Lion, and I skipped Mavericks because I read too many negative reviews, but I jumped in and got Yosemite on it, and then now it's running much slower. And I'm wondering, should I jump up the RAM? I got 4 gigs, or should I... Can I go backwards? Can I go back to Mountain Lion?
You can't go backwards. Mac is not really good about going the other direction.
No,
it's a lot of stuff that they do to move forward. So,
right.
As far as memory, what kind of Mac did you say you have?
PowerBook.
I would definitely. If you can bump up the memory, I would definitely bump up the memory, and it's probably not very expensive.
Right. I looked at it. It's about $80.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know I did my MacBook Pro, and it was like, I think, $70 or $80 to go from 4 to 8, and it's really a no-brainer to do that.
Okay.
And
it'll make a difference?
Yeah, it'll make a difference.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I've tried some of these programs that show you how much you're using,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like I'm not using that much memory, but I guess... going to 8 will make a difference. I'm going to go do it.
Yeah, and the operating system just has a lot more going on, and it'll definitely work better with the extra memory. Well, almost, you know, you can't say that with what people are using for Windows, because you have to say that cautiously, because if you're using a 32-bit version of Windows, it's only going to access 4 gigs of memory. If you're using 64-bit, it will use more. So people that are listening to this, it's really a Mac-answered question. And then Apple restricts how much you can add in your... I mean, all hardware is restricted to how much you're allowed to upgrade. So, for example, the Mac Pros, the bigger machines, can go higher than typically a laptop. And when I say higher, let's say 32 gigs or 64 gigs, and you're buying more expensive memory, a lot more chips. But the... system that you have is probably limited to 8, but it's not so dependent on the operating system, because Apple only has one operating system. They have different versions of it. You know, you mentioned Yosemite now, Mavericks, Mountain Lion, Sea Lion, Otter, whatever the name is. It's one version of the operating system across all their computers. Versus Windows, you could be using 32, or you could be using 64. So if you want to upgrade the memory in your computer and you have a 32-bit Windows system and it's already at 4, even if you add it and has room for it, it ain't going to do anything for you. But if you have 64 in a Windows system and you have room for it, it will help you.
Yeah, there you go. So good luck, Pat. Thanks
for the call. It's a great call.
Great call. And, well, let's go to another Pat, this one in Montford. Hi, Pat.
Hi.
Hi.
I upgraded my XP machine to Windows 7, and since I've done that, I've been trying to upgrade my Explorer, and it will not let me upgrade it. When I go to their website and try to download, it tells me that I need to update it, and I go to their website and download it, and... it gets probably 3/4 of the way through, and it says it's failed. And You know, I've tried several times, but it will not upgrade the Internet Explorer.
So is it failing in the actual download process, or is it failing in the install process? There are two things. One is to be able to download the file, which I recommend that typically when you're doing updates or upgrades that you download the actual file, know where it's being saved, and then run it, because if you don't have a very fast connection, and even trying to do the install across an Internet connection is not a good way. It's going to be slow and awkward for the system to try and handshake over the Internet to do an installation. So it's always good to save it and then do the install. So is it failing on the saving of the file, or is it failing on the installation of it?
I believe it's failing on the installation, but...
Okay.
So
now,
you
mentioned you upgraded from Windows XP to Windows 7.
So, correct. So,
and you're trying to download the latest Internet Explorer.
Well, I tried the latest, and then I tried to go to 9, and you know, but that always comes up that it failed. So, you know, I thought, well, maybe I'll just step it up.
You know, sometimes there might be other component. I'm just going to go in a couple of different directions with this. Sometimes you might need to do some other upgrades to like .NET on your system, Microsoft.NET, and see if that helps, because sometimes those are missing components.
Oh.
And they don't necessarily include that in the install of Internet Explorer. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is you mentioned that you had Windows XP. How old is the system?
It's got to probably be pretty close to 7 years old.
Yeah. There may be an issue with the video, and I don't know if that's running interference with actually trying to do that.
Oh, that could be.
Because I know there are different times in the install where it will basically say, you know, you don't have the hardware to do this. Sometimes it may not reach that point and just outright fail. So
yeah, I've gone to their site and seen what the, you know, what the criteria they have what you need for memory and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was wondering. I mean, like you were talking to the other guy previously about how much you can upgrade your memory,
right?
And it's pretty low on this machine as far as memory I can put with this hardware. So, I might be talking about upgrading the computer itself.
Yeah, yeah. One other option you could try, and I think it's still out there, but do a search on Microsoft Fixit, Fixit. And see if you can go to that site and then interact with your computer with that website to try and troubleshoot it and see what they come back with potential solutions. Because that's Microsoft's interactive site for trying to work on problems like that.
Yeah, good idea. Good luck, Pat. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Dave and Madison a chance to join us next. Dave, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate having the chance to talk to you guys about this kind of stuff, because I don't have a whole lot of resources I can turn to for some of this.
Yeah.
But I was curious about two things. First off, antivirus and Windows 8.1. I'm sure you get asked a lot about antivirus.
Yeah.
But I tried to get Windows Security Essential installed on my aunt's computer over the Easter weekend, and it looks like maybe it comes with Windows 8.1. Is that true?
Yeah. Just like Internet Explorer, Security Essentials comes with Microsoft Windows. I used to use it a lot, and now I actually turn that off. And if you want to work with some free products that are out there that I think work really well, there's AVG and Avast are a couple of really good, popular ones. You can upgrade to the ones that you pay for, but the free ones do have a lot of really good features. If you're running programs where you need to exclude programs from being scanned by the virus, you can do that. I believe you can do some scheduling, some timing of updates and things like that, so they don't run interference if you're doing certain things at a certain time. They got pretty high marks, end user reviews.
AVG and Avast. All right.
And you can go to a website like CNET.com. Does a lot of reviews, and they have the links to download either one of those products. And you'll don't be shocked when you see that they've been downloaded, 100 plus million times or 200 plus million times, because that's
people
how
like
many
them.
Times they've been used.
Thanks, Dave. Good luck. Eileen in Manitowoc, I believe.
Hi.
Hi.
What I was wondering is, okay, we turn on our computer, that works all fine, and then we turn on Internet Explorer, and then it goes real slow bringing up our home page and real slow going between sites. We were wondering if maybe we had a virus or if there's too many users online or what's wrong with my computer.
Okay.
With Internet Explorer, there might be some... you might have some options or add-ons turned on that might be running some interference.
Okay.
You might want to try. Do you have another browser on your machine, like Firefox?
Google Chrome. We have the Google.
Yeah, Google Chrome, Firefox. A lot of people use. They're leaner, more tuned web browsers. Internet Explorer has always been kind of
doggy.
Wonky,
mm-hmm.
kind of has just moments of, just being out there in La La Land and having issues. They've also had problems where when people adhere to proper website designs, and the websites do, but Internet Explorer doesn't. So I'm not saying that there's a lot of bad things about it. I'm just saying that, I've seen people change to other web browsers because Internet Explorer isn't consistent with its performance. And sometimes when you do Windows updates, that causes problems with it. And you might, if you're not the most current version, you could upgrade to the most current version of Internet Explorer and see if that helps. Sometimes that fixes the problem.
Yeah. That's,
okay.
I'd get another browser up. Firefox or somebody.
Yeah, I would look at Firefox and also just make sure, you're at the most current version of Internet Explorer and see if that helps.
All right. Good luck. Thanks, Eileen, for calling. Appreciate it. What about you? Do you have a computer question or a software question? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. We'd love to hear from you. We'll have open lines get you on pretty quickly. Guy in West Allis, it is your turn. Hi.
Hi. I've been working on building a computer for the last 6 weeks, and I've been having a problem with the motherboard. And they're giving me issue with the CPU, which is the main brain of the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I start my computer up, I can go to the BIOS and actually load an operating system. But whenever it would go to reboot, it would get stuck, and it would never come back up into BIOS. I've loaded the operating system on Windows 8.1 on an SSD drive, on a standard drive, taken out number of sticks of RAM and ran one stick of RAM, and I'm running an i7 Brain processor, and I can't get past that. Asus sent me another motherboard, and it was the same issue, but it couldn't restart into the operating system at all. It wouldn't even go to the BIOS. Being that I could run the operating system when I started from zero on the first motherboard, and the CPU would function properly, but when I would restart on that motherboard or boot up initially, the CPU light saying it was an error, the CPU should be just fine, being that it did operate fine at one point or another, correct?
Well, I've built computers before, and I always go back to when you're having problems like that, and you obviously have had one motherboard and you took that out and put another one in. Is it properly installed with insulating washers and so forth? Is it properly grounded? Because I know just like a car, if you have a grounding problem,
yes,
the car will work, but it will have very weird personality issues.
I've also installed the operating system and did that without installing it in the case at all,
mm-hmm.
and had it sitting out on a table. So that way, the only place it was grounded was strictly through the power cable, and it was still the same issue that way. I just wanted to think. I'm thinking to myself, if the CPU functioned properly at initial startup and it would work fine on the first motherboard, I just don't want to be having to buy another whole CPU and find out it was the motherboard initial to begin with, even though.
Right.
Yeah.
So, well, here's the other thing. You said, so you're using the same CPU. So you mounted the CPU in the motherboard, took that out, put in the second one, and you're having the same kind of problems.
So right. It's, except the second one wouldn't boot up at all. It wouldn't even get to the BIOS.
Right. But the problem is following the it's following the chip.
Well, I'll find out on the third motherboard because they're sending me another one.
Yeah. Well, because there are different, there could be different levels of failure of the CPU. You know, in other words, it reached one point, failed. Now you've moved it to another board, and you're still having problems as related to getting the computer to function, and you need that CPU to function in order to install anything. So unless you actually have a chip tester that says, hey, you know, you plug in the chip and it tells you it's okay. You're plugging into a third motherboard, and if it follows that, then it's probably pretty clear that the CPU has got the issue.
Yeah.
Now, is there any recourse to sending back the CPU?
I would never send back a CPU before. That would be a whole different
ball game.
Well, you have a supplier for it.
Yeah. So. Let's try this third one, and if it doesn't work, then that's what you're going to have to do.
Yep.
There you go.
Good
Thanks,
luck.
Guy. Yeah, good luck. Appreciate the call. Dan in River Falls, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi, thank you for your time. Are you still there?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. On Internet Explorer and Chrome, when I'm even on Google or if I'm on a Sierra Nevada or anything, on the top there's about an inch and a half streaming banner that scrolls across, and I cannot disable it. Is it an add-on that I'm not seeing, or
a streaming banner across the top of your web page, or the top of your,
like ESPN's banner that goes across?
No, it'll be like Dick's Sporting Goods or Walmart. Sometime will be on there.
So it's ads.
It'll be just different ads for different products.
It sounds like somehow you've downloaded a advertising plugin that's working on both browsers. So I'm trying to remember what one of the if you go through your program, which version of the operating system are you using? Do you know?
I believe it's Windows XP. I'm not in front of it right now. I'm on the road.
Well, if you go into your control panel and look at the programs, software programs that are installed on your computer, you might be able to scroll through the list and see if one of them sounds like a media one. And it might be what you have running on your system. The other thing is you might want to look at the add-ons or options within the browsers and see if you can turn those off in each one. Because it sounds like something got installed on your system that's just running on both of them. Especially if it's related to advertising.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks.
You could also, there's another program like Malwarebytes, which is really good about programs that, you know, kind of bug the heck out of you. And if you download Malwarebytes and have it do a scan on your system, it might alert you to that program and ask you if you want it removed or quarantined and see if that helps.
That's
too.
A free one, too.
Yep. Malwarebytes.
B-Y-T-E-S.
Yep. Malware. M-A-L-W-A-R-E-B-Y-T-E-S. And it's all one word.
Yep. There we go. Good luck, Dan. And Greg in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Hi.
Appreciate the call.
Hey, I have to say this. I learned how to straw bale garden from you about 3 years ago, and now I'm on the phone with a computer question. I'm increasing my donation to NPR.
That's awesome.
You. I have a MacBook Pro 17-inch that I bought in like 2008-2009, and a couple months ago it started to act up where when I put it to sleep it had actually shut down, and so then I figured something was going wrong with it, so I backed up my data, but now it's at the point where it won't even start up. And I've gone to, I went to my mobile device to find some YouTube videos. One said, let the battery drain out all the way. I did that. One said, take the battery out. I'm leery about doing that. Anything that you know that I can do, or?
Yeah, actually, I was going to go that route and say you should probably take out the battery and then plug it in and see if it works. Because, you know, 2008, 2009, we're in 2015, you know, batteries do go bad. Yeah. And they can cause they could cause that kind of interference where it won't start. So,
should I replace the battery?
Well, try taking it out first, and then plug it in and see if it still works. And then
plug it in without the battery. Though.
Right. Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So even though it says don't take out the battery, I should take it out.
Yeah. Or
okay.
Yeah, I mean the other option is if where are you located?
Milwaukee.
I'm in West Milwaukee.
If you have a good, because MacBook Pro, that's a pretty pricey laptop. I mean, those are not inexpensive, the one that you have.
Right.
I actually have one like it. It's just a little newer. You may want to take it to a place that works on Mac repairs. If you come to Madison, you got the Apple Store and,
Yeah, we've got an Apple Store in Wauwatosa.
Okay.
You might want to go there.
Yeah, I would probably do that. If you don't feel comfortable with it, I think that's probably a pretty good option.
Yep.
Okay.
And
they're
pretty good about making a good assessment of what's going on.
Okay. Great.
Yep.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate the call. Peter Green,
I'm a do-it-yourselfer. I would take the battery out, but if you got an Apple Store there, you're not someone that does that kind of stuff, use it. It's a good resource.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, my guest. Peter Green of Infostar.com, talking computers and software with him today. You can join us. Maybe you have a problem with your computer. You can go to our Facebook page. The title of our page is The Larry Mueller Show. Go there, post. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or phone. The lines are all filled right now, but the number is 1-800-642-1234. Laurie in Salem up next. Laurie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I bought a laptop last year with Windows 8 on it. I cannot get used to it. Is there something else I can download that would make it look and act more like Windows 7?
Well, actually, if you were to download the 8.1 update, that's got the ability to change the look and feel, or there's a thing called, I believe it's called Classic Shell. I link to it off of my Infostar.com website. If you go to the current top 10, I think it's like link number 11 or 12 off of today's list. And if you go back for months, it's maybe even a year or two I've added up there. But I believe it's called Classic Shell. You could Google it and search for it. And it's a free that's a free download if you don't want to go through and do the 8.1. And
okay.
And it'll allow you to change the look and feel so it's like Windows 7.
Wonderful,
because
I hate it.
There you go.
Yeah, you're not alone, and that's why they went to 8.1 to fix that.
Yeah.
Okay.
They heard about it enough that they had to do something.
Oh.
Don't you remember when I talked about it and I said, I don't even know how to shut this off.
Oh, man. Well, let's see what Joe in Milwaukee's got for us. Joe, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an administrator for a church, and we have a school here in Milwaukee. And recently, our computers were affected by what they call a ransom virus. And we're trying to figure out the best way to fight it, or is there any way to prevent it in the future? This particular virus, we had to call the FBI because your computer is not unlocked until you pay a ransom.
Right.
You pay a sum of money. So yep. What do you do?
Okay. Number one, if you have backups, those backups should be disconnected so that they're not going to get affected.
Okay.
Paying the ransom's not going to do anything because they've collected probably hundreds of millions of dollars from people thinking that they're going to get this unlock code back. And they're like, I believe some of them are like times of wasting. I forgot the name of what one of them did. It was fairly, CryptoLocker was one of them. And you can look that up. The best you can do is have, you know, backup plans in place, you know, backing up your data and making sure that your backups are current. And having, you know, antivirus software installed on all your workstations. Whatever state, one of those stations got affected, and you really have to go through each system by system and analyze it for the virus and disinfect it and get rid of it. The files that got affected are locked or encrypted, and that's where they're telling you, hey, you know, if you want to get them back, we'll give you the unlock code. That's not going to happen. So you're just gonna have to go through painstakingly and see which files are still good and which files are bad, and find backups to replace those that were working but are no longer not.
Yeah.
Is there a particular antivirus that's good? Now the documents that we are trying to protect are school records, of course.
Right. Yep.
And if we lose those, it's just so hard to try to replace that information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I would stay away from the large antivirus programs like McAfee and Norton, because to me those are ones with target. I say this over and over again, and I read documents about this. There is no 100% way, unless you unplug your computer from the internet and don't download anything, to stay protected.
Okay.
Again, I'll say it again. There's no 100% way to guarantee that you won't get infected unless you're unplugged from the internet or you don't download or go anywhere or do anything, including email, web pages, transferring files, sharing pictures, and things like that. What's the best way you can do is having an antivirus program that is updated. If you let the update lapse, you're providing a hole or a gap where these programs can get in, because they're always trying to find flaws. They're always trying to find the hole that lets them in the back door. So these antivirus program companies try and keep tabs on what is out there, along with the FBI and other entities. There's a lot of security companies out there, and they share information. There are these databases that basically have this information, and then they update those antivirus programs. But they're never 100%. So you have to do something, so get an antivirus program to protect your system. But there's no 100% way to guarantee that unless, like I said, you're disconnected or you just don't do anything.
Okay.
All right.
I really appreciate you guys. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Yeah, thanks.
Good luck.
Joe, wow, that's a...
Yeah, it's a lot. You have to go through all the files. You have to use the programs to access the files to check and see if you can actually, you know, access them. And if that you can, then that's good. If it's not, then you either have to recreate the file or you have to go from a backup to access them.
Tom and Stevens Point, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Thank you for the show. I really appreciate the resource.
Sure.
I am searching for a solution that will do calendaring, contacts, and email and stay synced across various platforms. I currently use a netbook Windows 7, a laptop Windows 7, an Android phone, and an Android tablet. And I'm using Office 365. I like Outlook, but I just struggle getting it all to synchronize across those platforms.
Yeah, I think I would go with Google and Gmail. And Android, is the operating system for the Android phone is owned by Google.
Correct.
So, and, you know, Gmail is web-based. You're going to be able to do it on your phone. You're going to have the calendar. In fact, I have calendaring features turned on that I should say accidentally they were turned on. I was like, oh, wow, that's in my Google Calendar. You know, that's in my calendar on my phone. but I put it on my desktop. And I was like, oh, how'd that get there? And it was like my eye doctor tripped something that made it work. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
So
I do use Google. It's not as robust as Outlook, but maybe that's the only option to me.
There's probably a plug-in for using Outlook to do what you want to do.
Okay.
You know, in fact, I would probably say there definitely is one out there, and you could probably just find it, or there's probably instructions how to, you know, get it to turn, you know, turn it on to do the things that you want.
Great.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Peter in Stoughton. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Hi.
Two things. First of all, when I'm browsing in Chrome, I'll click on a link and have a new tab come up, and I'll see the little arrow spinning around and spinning around, but nothing will appear on the page until I click on the X to stop the download, and suddenly I'll have what I've been waiting for appear there. Could you tell me what's going on there?
Have you tried clearing the cache or history on your the Google Chrome, and still no effect?
This happens intermittently, but it happens with a cache cleared and not cleared. And I might have eight tabs up, or I might have four tabs up.
Have you tried updating Chrome recently?
Is it the most current?
It's most current.
That's a head-scratcher.
Okay. My next question is, how do companies who are distributing free security and photo editing and, well, all of that free stuff, how do they make money?
Free companies, how do they make money?
AVG and, you know.
I'll answer that in a second. You might, to the last one that you asked, you might want to check some of the add-ons in Google Chrome and see if whether or not sometimes some of the add-ons have different versions. So you might be able to see if there's one that's just malfunctioning and needs an update. The only one that's really good about updating or pushing an update out there is Adobe Flash, you know, where you get the notification to do that. Some of the add-ons that you may have in your Google Chrome may need fixing, and that's what's causing the roadblock on your browser.
Okay.
As far as the free companies, boy, that's a good question because there are a lot of different models. Sometimes they make money just because they know that they're going to be popular so that you get to that people visit their website to do the download or whatever it is, and they charge for advertising to come to their website, you know, because maybe there's an advertiser on their website, so visitors see that. Another one is, you know, if you're looking at, like, Facebook, for example, makes money through advertising. You know, a lot of things that are streamed or, you know, sponsored. Google, same thing. Google has sponsored ads or sponsored links. So, you know, YouTube, you go to see YouTube and you're going to see a 15-second or 20-second segment for, you know, an ad. And you can skip it eventually, but, you know, you may have to, you know, see that ad. So, you know, YouTube is free. And then there's the other model where you download something, some piece of software, and then they prompt you with questions about, hey, I'm going to install this on your system, and this is what it's for, and this is what it's going to do. Do you want to accept or decline? And if you accept it, it might be another free program that's actually going to pay them for people clicking through. And if people click through or buy something because of that, then they get compensated for it. And then there's the free model of software that comes with your new computer, and it's a trial version, and you try it and you like it, and you pay for the real one. They get a cut of what was on that computer, you know, what you purchased off of that. So there's a lot of those are just a few examples.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Peter, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Anne wonders if you've heard about Apple's Stagnate.
No.
I don't know anything about that either. Can you recommend a secure cloud site for backing up your system?
There are a number of sites out there that review them. There are ones that are good for enterprise solutions and ones that are good for personal solutions. If you go to the Virus Info Center page, and if you go, boy, I can look here. If you go down probably to the bottom third of the first page, it says backups. I've got listed 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, probably at least a dozen, if not more, backup sites to try. Some are free. They may give you 1 or 5 gigabytes of space. And in this day and age, that can get exhausted depending upon when you're backing up pictures, videos, music files, and documents and things like that. Even Apple gives you some free space as well.
Yeah.
And most people should be using that to back up their iPhones to the cloud for some stuff. There's a little bit of skepticism about doing some of that because, you know, you're pushing stuff up there and technically, you know, Google's got access to it, Apple's got access to it. The backup software is out there, the review sites. So, you know, type in backup software review to the cloud and you'll probably find some good review sites.
Peter Green of Infostar.com with us right up until 12:30 today. Let's take a look at the news. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, taking a look at your computer today with Peter Green of Infostar.com. At this time of the show, when Pete's on, we always have a top 10 list of sites to go to, and we kind of quickly run through those and give a listen because he's got some good ones, always does. And what's there for us today, Pete?
Okay, if you go to Infostar.com and on the top left, you've got top 10 archives. Scroll down to today's date, or you just click on the current top 10, and this is the list. First one is FuelGaugeReport.com. And it tracks nationwide pricing of gas and lots of numbers and tables there. The next one, this is a good one for internet service provider connectivity, and it's called downdetector.com. And it's a resource that tracks downtime of the ISPs that are out there. Number three is Rant, R-A-N-T, sports.com, and provides online coverage of all major sports. Number four is a resource that covers celebrities, movies, TVs, and style. Lots of interesting articles keep you entertained. It's called suggest.com. Number five, I probably mentioned this back in like 2001 when it started up, and it deserves it along with a class of some other resources. It's called meetingwizard.com, and a couple of my hockey groups use it to help people to sign up for ice time.
Sure.
And it's just a real useful resource to do that for events and organize people. And there are a couple other links too up there for other resources to do very similar things. Number six is called EarthEasy.com. And it's a place that sells products, but they've also got a lot of useful articles about sustainable living. Number seven, and I'm not endorsing that, I'm just saying that they've got a lot of good, useful articles to take advantage of. Number seven is the NHL.com, close to my heart in terms of hockey. But the reason I posted there is now as playoff time is coming up on the 15th, along with the NBA and Major League Baseball, so the links to those as well. It's that time of the year where these sports all clash, and a lot of good stuff out there. Number eight, same thing this time of the year, tracking tornadoes. TornadoHistoryProject.com. 58,000 plus tornado maps for the United States from 1950 to the year 2013. Wow. A lot of data there, too. Number nine, created by the Center for Persons with Disabilities, it's called webaim.org. And they also have a web accessibility evaluation tool, which is used for helping people design websites to see if it's using proper design features.
Oh, cool.
And the last one is kind of like taking a look at back at the web, and it's called the searchenginelist.com. And the reason I say taking a look back is it's a comprehensive list of search engines. And how many of us are using Google, Yahoo, Bing, and what else? Alta Vista come to mind, and there are a bunch of others. Well, this site's got a list of what probably was out there and was used all over the place. But now we've really got our own kind of favorites, and there are not too many being used off of that list anymore.
Well, here, and that's on your Infostar.com site, and go there, and you'll...
You could go back to 1997 is when I started putting that list up.
Lots of good things on that list with Peter Green. And here's Connie. Connie's probably, in Madison's probably got lots of good questions. Hi, Connie, thanks for calling.
Sure, thank you. I'm not real computer literate, so I'll take a stab at this. I have an iPad 2. We have Windows 5. And for at least the last year, I often get the message, quote, a problem occurred with this web page, so it was reloaded. And this must be a common problem, because when I have gone online and put that particular line in, there are many, many sites with that problem, addressing that problem. I have done what they have suggested, and it really didn't help. I ended up going to the Apple store. I told them the problem. They did something, I don't know what, and it was working fine for a while, I'd say, you know, a couple of months, and then it started all over again, and it's coming up really often now. And what happens sometimes, like I was watching PBS last night, and it just kind of freezes, and then the message comes up, and then whatever I'm watching starts all over again. So I was watching a program, and I restarted it three times, hoping I would get through it, but I never did. So do you have any suggestions for me?
A couple of questions for you. So you said iPad 2. What else are you using?
Windows 5.
Windows. There is no Windows 95?
Oh. Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, how old's your computer?
The computer, you mean my iPad?
Well, the iPad's probably a few years old.
Right.
Probably 3-4 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So are you having the problem?
We got it when they came out, so okay. However long the iPad 2 has been out.
Okay, yeah. So maybe 4 years. So are you having the problem on the iPad?
Yeah, that's what I...
That's what she has.
Okay.
That's what I said. It's on my iPad, the iPad 2 that I use.
Okay, all right. My thought is my iPad 2 has been acting kind of weird, and I think... It might be related to a couple of things. Have you tried clearing the history or cache on your browser? Do you do that at all? Where you go settings?
I think so. Or they did that at the.
That's something that you should probably do periodically. So you go into settings in your iPad, and then you scroll down on the left side. You'll find Safari listed, and then you should clear your history. I believe with the latest version of the iOS, it's just more clear and obvious when it comes up, and then you should just clear it. You should say yes to clearing it. So that's one thing that'll help. The other thing is if you're getting tight on memory space, which can happen with these tablets, if you're, putting pictures on it or videos, you may want to look at seeing what the capacity is and how close you are. I'm guessing you probably have a 16 gig iPad, or are you not sure?
I'm not sure.
It was probably the one you paid. You know, they have had a whole bunch of different models, but it's probably the least expensive iPad.
Where
you're connected to Wi-Fi.
I think there was a three. a 300 one and a 400 one, and okay. We did the 300 one.
Yeah.
Yeah, see,
so, yeah, yeah. So you probably have the one that's got 16 gigs of memory. So depending upon how many apps you have installed and other things that you're doing with it, you might be bumping the memory limit, and it starts acting kind of weird and hesitating when you're getting close on memory as well.
So you can, if there are apps you can get rid of, which often there
right.
so, are.
Yeah, so you can get, if you're, like you know, me. If you're not really using them, you know, get rid of them. The other thing is the clearing of the cache helps. So if you just keep doing that over time, it can bog even a desktop or a laptop down.
You know, I haven't done that for a while. I should get back in the settings, too, and do that on mine. Although it seems to be running fine, but...
I know when I do it, it works better.
Yeah, I can just... Yeah, and I just... I haven't... I can't even remember when I last did
that. I'm surprised they didn't tell you what they did when they took it from you.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, it's really weird.
Because usually those geniuses are pretty smart.
Connie, thanks. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
No pun intended.
Oh, no. Nick in Wauwatosa, it is your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hey, guys. Hi. Peter, Larry, good to talk to you.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, I feel like I'm fairly computer literate. I use several computers, and I'm experiencing slow web page loading, but... not on my Surface. So on my laptop running 7, it's slow, and on my Surface, it's not. I use several browsers. I've tried them all, not all. Chrome, Firefox, and Explorer. I clear my cache regularly, my internet files regularly. I keep it clear of viruses, and I'm not running. I rarely run any add-ons. So I'm missing, I feel like I'm missing something on this laptop. Maybe, you know, it's, the disks are almost full, and maybe that's bogging my loading of web pages on my laptop down.
Yeah, that could make a difference in terms of if you're running close on space. A couple of things you could do if you haven't done them already. You could resize your recycle bin for how much it's using by default on your laptop. So if you right mouse click on it, click on properties, and then you know size it to. You could probably make it like I make it between 250 and 500 meg, because if it's something large that you're going to delete, it'll ask you, "Are you sure you want to get rid of all this?" And if it's a large program, and you're making that choice, you're probably not going to want it back anyhow. So that's one thing to do. And then your system restore is the same thing under accessories and tools, or if you right mouse click on your computer and go to properties and then system protection, and then you'll see system restore. You can change that, which is a default at 12%, so you can reclaim at least 20% of your disk space.
That's a good idea too.
Yeah,
yeah.
And Windows.
That's like called.
Yeah, yeah. Windows and Apple, all the computers use what's called a swap space on the hard drive. So that's dictated by how much memory is in your computer, and it's an assigned amount of space. And if the operating system's got to deal with the swap space, and then it's assigning other space on the drive to be allocated, and you're running tight on space, then things start to bump and grind and slow things down.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a great. That's what I was looking for. I needed some suggestions. That's great.
All right. Good luck, Nick. Thank you. Appreciate the call. I want to get
one other thing that you can use for speed is. You could get a USB drive, and boy, those come down in price. You can get, I know from like probably Tiger and Newegg and buy.com, you can probably get 32 and 64 gig thumb drives, and Windows uses, can boost a little, I don't know how to quantify this, but it can boost a little bit of speed. You get one of those drives, you could use it for backups, and I think it's called Ready Boost. And it'll also use some of the space on that drive for making in your system a little bit faster. So that's, and those are like $15 to $30.
Yeah, they're really cheap.
Yeah.
Jim in Winnebago, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry and Peter. Boy, I'll tell you, if legislators were tuned to Wisconsin Public Radio, they would never think about cutting the funding.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I have a very large PowerPoint presentation that's narrated. It's about 60 megabytes, and I like to send it to a whole lot of different people, and I'm trying to figure out a way to make it easy on them when they receive it. You can't attach it to email because it's so large.
Dropbox.
And I've used Google Drive and I've used Dropbox.
Okay.
But when you open the link, what happens, of course, is it opens it as a PDF as opposed to a PowerPoint. And you know how people are. They don't really quite follow directions. And as a consequence, they say, well, I can't open it or it doesn't look right. So I wonder if you have any suggestions for that.
Hmm. So people aren't reading what you're sending them
properly. Yeah.
Dropbox would be the first suggestion because you know it handles large files. I mean, I've downloaded very large, you know, program files.
I don't know. What
you
else
you tell me that it's a PowerPoint presentation. They're opening up by as a PDF file.
Well, when you use Dropbox or Google Drive, then share it with an individual via email. There's essentially a hot link. You click on that hot link, and it does not open it in PowerPoint.
It should be saved, but it should be saving the file first.
Well, it does save the file. Absolutely, yeah. Saves the file. But you have to tell the person to download the file,
right.
and then open it in PowerPoint. And there are some people that don't want to spend 15 minutes downloading a 60 megabyte file.
Stump the
chumps, huh?
Well, no. The other option is if you had access to your own website and you say, you know, you point them to a link where the file is located on your website and say, you know, which is basically what Dropbox is doing. They've allocated space on a hard drive that's, you know, got a public link or a private link, and you're just pointing them to it. With, you know, your own web space, you basically, and there are places out there that will give you web space for free. You may even have it with your own internet service provider, and then you just, you know, post the file up, and it has an address.
And then tell people to go there, yeah.
Yeah, it has an address, and then you tell them to go there. As far as whether or not they open it up with PowerPoint or another application, that's more dictated by their system because your file extension dictates what program it belongs to.
Yeah.
So
okay,
then it becomes a user problem not opening it with the right software.
I've tried it with a couple different people, and they've had the same problems. What I'll do is I'll send it to you, and we'll work on it together. How's that?
Well, I think that another option is whoever you're using for internet service, like Charter. I don't know where you're located, but they usually give you some free web space to take advantage of that. And like I said, if you do a search for free web space, basically you're saying you could create a website with our space for free, but we're going to put banner ads on it. Big deal.
Okay. All right.
So,
good.
Yeah. That's a couple of
it's
other
worth a try. Options. Yeah. Definitely worth a try, Jim. Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling. Rick in Nakusa. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'm running into an issue with getting a constant message back at me that says Shockwave is not responding, and either press continue or end it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to coordinate about the same time with some problems with Adobe Flash, which seems to want to die and crash from time to time.
Yeah. The Adobe Shockwave and Flash seem to be updated fairly often. And you can either tell your system to not do it, and if whatever you're using or accessing uses those and they're not working properly, then you should definitely update them. So you might want to go. Go ahead.
I just got a new download from Adobe Flash, so
right.
That's as current as it comes.
Okay. you might want to try an alternative browser and making sure that's current and seeing if it responds the same way. There might be just sometimes there are glitches just because of how the order and how things are installed. And until the next update comes along, it doesn't fix the problem. Because there are a lot of users out there, and you know, sometimes you become part of the 1 or 5% that gets affected, and then they don't fix it until they hear back from enough people, and then they just push out another update.
So Shockwave Flash is an independent plugin?
Shockwave and Flash are both plugins. Yep.
Okay.
And also, and it'll prompt you, you know, when you're doing the download install, it'll say, hey, you need to get out of your browser, or it'll tell you what needs to be turned off or turned on.
Yeah.
Usually they're pretty good about prompting you.
Good luck, Rick. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Steve a chance to join us from Sun Prairie. Steve, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've been listening all morning, and I'm just kind of curious. It seems as though 95% of your calls have been about Windows, and I, too, use the Emily Latello system. It's always something. And I'm just kind of curious as to whether or not you think or Peter thinks that he would have received as many calls were he talking about Macintosh.
They're different.
Different calls.
Different
kind of calls.
I can tell you, you know, at work, what I have at home, what I have at work, what people that I work with, it crosses both. I mean, it's Apple and Windows, all different versions, all different devices. They both of them have issues. You know, I get mad at Apple. I get mad at Windows and at Microsoft. I call Microsoft $M$ a lot. I don't, and Apple is probably more $ too, but they don't have that in their initial.
But you have fewer problems with Macs.
Fewer problems in terms of dealing with viruses, worms, malware, you know, the ransom software. But, you know, it boils down to what are your needs, goals. You know, I talked about this back in the 90s, and it's still the same today. What are your needs, goals, and objectives of using the computer? Find the right software and then match it to the proper hardware. If what you're doing isn't available on a Mac, but it is, and there are many options on a Windows system, then what's the decision? The decision is you can't be looking at a Mac. But if the options are that what you need to do is available for both systems, then weigh, you know, what are the costs? And then make your decision.
And there you have it,
and
Steve.
And what works best.
I still like Macs the best. But
I use both of them.
I know you do. Pete, and that's why it's great to have you on. Thank you so much for being with us. They look
Thanks,
forward
Larry.
To your next visit. Peter Green of Infostar.com. He'll be back, and we'll do this again with him. And thank you for listening. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about a vocal pattern that has become more common and whether it's cause for concern. And then 11:45, we'll talk about head and neck cancer and why it's important to get that fast and easy screening done. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Root for the Badgers tonight. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.